Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oi, the boys and girls on Footy Prime on occasion are known to use vulgarities and frankly appalling language. And sometimes the tales can get quite adult in nature. So keep the volume down if there are kiddies around. And thank you for listening.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. You know that we are the number one show. So grab your fucking mitts and now it's time to go. Cause it's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. It's the
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
Andy, Jimmy, and JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
You're listening to Footy Prime The Broadcast, a broad perspective of all things footy. Footy Prime, your almost daily footy fix.
Did you say impressed?
I was just like, oh, they've got some air.
There it is.
Good start.
I thought so. Hey.
Audience.
It's perfect.
Yeah, I know. It's like a switch, right?
I don't have it.
Well, you don't have it because you're 3 hours earlier than I am. So for everybody, this is Footy Prime, the broadcast. We have Rian Wilkinson. We have Claire Rustad. And I'm Amy Walsh. And we're here for a broad discussion on all things football, specifically women's football. But we've been gone for a bit. So we're back. But it's 7 a.m. on the West Coast, which is where Claire and Rian are. So they are to be forgiven, perhaps, for you guys are usually sharp. You're right on the ball. I don't have to make excuses for you.
I mean, Claire's a doctor, so hopefully she is, but I don't need to be. But I don't need to be functioning.
But it's been a bit, right? The last time we chatted was beginning of December, right before Sinkey's farewell game at BC Place. So maybe we can start there before we move on to other things, because there's certainly a lot to discuss. But the first thing we should discuss is that Claire's making a school lunch while we're doing the broadcast. Sorry,
the toaster just went off.
As women, we're multitaskers. As mums, we're multitaskers. So, and Claire's gone. She's washed herself, pressed
the mute button, and left the building.
So we'll be welcoming Claire back into the show. She should be coming back, or she was really offended. Yeah, that's clear.
Well, I liked how you prefaced that with like women are multitaskers.
I know. No,
been that it's really hard to multitask, and Claire's left.
Yep. Turns out she can only focus on one thing.
No,
sorry, future patients.
The red button that says "leave studio" is apparently not the mute button.
True. See, multitasking. We're
again,
good at it.
Yeah. 7 a.m. on the West Coast.
You
are to be forgiven.
The star doctor. Giant red button.
Come on. Oh, that shows my really messy kitchen. Okay.
That was a euphemism, guys. Oh, boy. Okay, we have a lot to get to. We have a special guest today. Mariam Karabi from She Scores Bangers is going to join us in a little bit. But I thought at first we would just kind of catch up. So, yeah. So, impressions from maybe this fall, the team qualifies for Paris. Really great turnaround from a really poor performance at the Women's World Cup. Bev gets an extension. We'll dive into that later. But great run of form in those friendlies. And I think capped off with a great evening and a great salute to both Cinqui and Sophie Schmidt and Erin McLeod as well.
No, it was really nice. I think I told you, Amy, that it was almost overwhelming because I can't imagine for those three, I could never finish a conversation. There was just another person to see and it was lovely. And I think the alumni have been crying out for an event or to a yearly event where the Canadian alumni can come back together. And it was great seeing all different eras there, which was wonderful. And I hope Cinqui, Sophie, Erin really felt the love. They've been stalwarts with the team for a long time. And I mean, everyone will rightly speak about Cinq, but equally Erin and Sophie have been huge parts of this program. So I'm so glad that they were able to have that moment as well. So it was a wonderful few days.
Yeah, and as much criticism as Canada Soccer gets, I think that was executed to perfection. I had my doubts, and Claire, you can maybe speak to this because you were on the call. I was on the panel that was pitch side, and that was a privilege. That was wonderful. And then we also got to catch up with our fellow alumni after the fact, even though I was looking up longingly at that at that box and wishing I was pounding drinks up there with everybody. But I think they did a really good job. Canada Soccer did. What were your impressions, Claire?
Yeah, there were a few funny things that Luke and I were giggling about, like the one kid in the middle of the anthems who really had to pee and did the long run across the field to the tunnel was pretty funny. There was one thing I wish they had changed, and that's it seemed a shame for the team to go out on the field and then have Cinqui come in after the fact. Like she didn't get to lead her team out for that final game. And that kind of felt, I don't know. It kind of felt like, I mean, it's not Cinqui to have the spotlight directly on just her like that. And it kind of felt like I wish she'd had a chance to do that, to like lead the team out one more time.
Yeah, I agree with you, but then seeing it, and I thought that was the wrong
I know it ended up looking
we
okay.
talked about it. I thought it was great, Rian. You were part of that 2012 winning team that gave all three players that guard of honor on the pitch, and I just thought that was wonderful.
Yeah.
Like in theory, it sounded wrong, but in practice, it was perfect.
Yeah,
yeah. I didn't know about it. I didn't know what was going. I think the only thing for me, it was really nice. Like that team, we all lived together. I mean, we spent so much time together, that team. But what the only thing I would say is it. Not that any alumni said this, but almost divided the alumni. And I was like, well,
come on, Rian, call somebody out.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Who was it?
No, there wasn't. I just feel like there's this alumni event I was saying that we were calling out for. And then all of a sudden it was almost like tiered. There's the team.
Oh, you mean like between 2012 and the rest of
everyone else? There's even like a sweater for some of the alumni, not for all the alumni, because some were on the field. And I thought Canada Soccer did brilliantly. I actually told them, I wrote to them. I thought for all the shit they get, and a lot of it is rightly so. I have said before, there is a group that works for Canada Soccer that kill themselves every day. They do the job of 10. And that was a huge event to put on.
Yeah, and we saw many of them on the ground, hard at work.
Because they are. There's no one else. This is just them. They're the person that does events, is literally on the field doing events, but also in the office running. I mean, it's amazing. It was a wonderful idea. I loved it. I just felt like a little bit of like a like all these people up in the suite who maybe got a different experience. That's all. I don't know.
And then what do you guys think now? So, and we'll get to the rumors have been Jesse Fleming sightings in Portland as this window comes to a close, and nothing yet formally announced, after she's not featured for Chelsea since December 20th, and then rumored to be going to Portland Thorns for a record signing fee. But what do you guys think about Cinqui re-upping there and then her kind of run of form individually playing out what should be her last year with the Thorns in the NWSL? She has said that she will not play for a Project 8 team. Do you guys see that happening? Do you see like her having a hard stop after this year?
Hold on a second. I'm dealing with a crisis. I'll be right.
I don't think it'll be a, I think there is room for it to not be a hard stop in terms of how she wants to play out her Portland, the end for like her end of playing for Portland. I mean, I've told Sinky as well. I mean, this woman could play till she's 55 if she's comfortable with her role changing. And I think that's really hard for our top players. I don't mean Canadian. I mean, anywhere that you are the linchpin of your team, everything comes for you. And all of a sudden you're a bit part player. You don't maybe play every game. You don't dress every game. That's almost impossible sometimes for these players. So Sinky's year this year will be really telling, because I think she's been getting fewer minutes as her career has come to a close. And this year, they've got a team that's, you know, got a title to re-win and get back onto the top, and they're going to be challenged the whole way. And she's going to be a role player, and how that sits with her, you know, it's going to be really difficult. So we'll see how that goes. But I think if she can embrace her role, like there is a definite call for her and Becky Sauerbrunn to look at doing a little bit of coaching as well as playing maybe in the last year, just to help them move out and maybe introduce them to a coaching role, which I think they'd both be wonderful at.
And you touched on something there really critical for players like Sinky, these generational talents, or players who are used to things being built around them and being comfortable with adapting and being comfortable with the changing role. And I don't know if I really see that happening. I think we've seen some reticence on our part to do that, right? Like, yes, she's not comfortable with the spotlight, but she's also not comfortable being peripheral. So Claire, how do you see that playing out for Christine Sinclair as she closes out her club career?
I don't know. I mean, you'd almost think that something has changed, because she's retired from the international game. So you'd almost expect that she's probably changed her mindset somewhat about her club.
That's a good point.
Her club role as well. And I think this was always her plan, right? Like, I think she's always pretty clear that, always her plan from the moment we all found out that she was going to retire, which feels like 5 weeks ago. But that she would play another season out with her club team. I think it makes sense. At the same time, I could have easily seen her kind of do both at once, but I think it's a bit of a softer landing to play another club year and not just kind of cut everything off. I agree with Rhian. I think she'll probably be involved in some way in Portland. I can't imagine she wouldn't. I can't speak for Christine in that I don't have a clue as to whether or not she's interested in coaching or not. Yeah, I was somebody when I retired, I was like, nope. I was just like, I mean, there were a lot of reasons why I really needed to kind of distance myself. I think it's not necessarily this year when she's playing that'll be as interesting as kind of next year when she stops. Like, what really will be the plan? And I don't think any of us will know until she's ready to tell us.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, we'll know when we'll know. But it's funny how the three of us, when we retired, we're like out, we're gone. And then all three of us are back in the game in some respect, which is very
and
cool.
And like, in sort of surprise, I never would have thought I'd be back in the way that I am. Like, I never would have thought that like being on TV would have been the thing. That's not something I saw in the book. So like, I think that your post career could surprise you in a way. So I'm not. That's why I don't really know what capacity she'll or what role she'll take afterwards.
Yep.
Interesting, Claire. Sorry to interrupt. I think it's often said about Sink that she doesn't like the limelight. She's not interested. That's obviously true. You see that through her actions. But also, she has spent the last 20 plus years in the limelight. It's what she's used to. She is a soccer player. She is GOAT. She is. That is a heavy, heavy title and role to play, but also she's used to it. And so when you see soft landing, she lives in Portland. That's her city. It's her team. I see her definitely having a big part to play in Portland in the future as well as now, and what that looks like, that's for her to answer. But I do think, and we've talked about it, retirement is impossible. It's impossible to through without some kind of weird depression, identity crisis. And for those players that are stars, it's 100 times worse. And so for Sinky, I wish her support system, but also a connection to the team for as long as she needs, because it is really hard. And I think this will be a tough time for her.
Yep. Really wise words, Rian, for sure. But on that note, and we will get this next person's take on this issue, because I'm eager to hear what she has to say, but we will bring on our good friend, Miriam. Hi, Miriam.
Hello, how are you?
Welcome. Good. How about you?
I'm very well.
Thank you for being so patient. We had a lot to say right off the top.
Oh, I was very much like locked in listening. I was droning.
Okay, terrific. Well, I'm just going to let everybody know, if they don't know already, who you are. Are you still 20?
21.
21.
Yeah. What?
Claire, we're just going to move on, okay? We're not going to stay fixated on that. Okay.
So I feel like I need Botox like during this podcast.
That's right. Or just stretch your face just a little bit. Or
just like
move away from the camera.
Take
a few steps back.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Yeah. Okay, back to Miriam. So at only 21 years old, she's the founder of She Scores Bangers, a platform to provide accessible content about women's sports, but more specifically women's football. She's also involved in Canada Soccer Daily, writing all things women's soccer news, opinions, analysis, and breakdowns, and weekly roundups of women's soccer and Canadians abroad. So we're really chuffed, really pleased that you could join us, Miriam.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Welcome. Yeah. Did you have anything to say to add to that discussion about Christine as she sort of gets closer to the end of her career on the club side?
I think I probably have similar thoughts to Claire of like she enters this last year with a different mindset, knowing that this is the last year. This mindset would have not been the same like 2 or 3 years ago, where she knew retirement was coming. She just didn't know when that last season was going to be. So when she puts that pen to paper of the last season, there's a different aura around how to conduct herself, a different, like, I guess, understanding of the players that are going to be around her. They're going to be the next ones to take on kind of that midfield leadership role. So a different mindset coming into this last season, because that's what you'd expect. So it's hard to kind of put it, you know, kind of put your finger on it of what she's going to be looking like or how she'll conduct herself, because we haven't seen it. We haven't seen her go on a final season. We've seen the last few games, but now you're seeing it as a final season.
Yeah, for sure. But getting into more about you, how did this all start, the She Scores Bangers? How long have you been at it? And what was the motivation to begin it? Because it's grown into something pretty impressive.
Yes. Honestly, I think it was a year and a half ago in the summer where I had just finished my second year of uni and I was out of a job because we just relocated houses. So I was like at home watching Sunday games and Saturday games and whatnot, but there was nothing in between. And I was able to really become a big fan and like consume a lot of the sport. But I realized there was a big hole, I guess, in covering the sport of like nitty gritty conversations, like having tough discussions, bringing in a bit of a wider perspective on the women's game, because I think
or a broad perspective, you might say, Miriam.
Bingo.
You gotta be careful here.
Exactly that. I think it's brilliant how much the game has grown in Europe and specifically in England and obviously the NWSL, but this still feels there was a big hole in like talking a little bit more about Scandinavian teams in English or German teams also in English. but even NWSL teams from like a non-American perspective, just to weigh in a little bit differently on it. So that's kind of, I guess, the starting point of it, of like, let's just talk about it and engage in conversations. And I guess through the way I like learned a little bit more. And that summer when I launched, it was the Euros. So it was a fantastic time period to jump onto things. And just like, there was a lot of conversation happening anyway. So it was good to jump on that wave. So it was a lot of learning. It was a lot of free time and consuming the sport. And I was like, there's a little bit more that I wanted to know as a fan. And like, every time I conduct an interview or a podcast or whatever, maybe I'm putting on the shoe of an audience of like, what do I want to know about this? What don't I know about this? I still use that perspective. Hasn't changed. It's been like a fantastic almost year and a half now.
Nice. And you've seen really outstanding growth as well. Like, I'm not even looking at your YouTube subscribers or your podcast subscribers, but on Twitter alone, you've got almost 13,000 followers.
Yeah, that
which crushes me, Miriam. How dare you?
that's not fair, is it? I'm not gonna lie, it's been like a bit surprising, I have to admit. I think I've been lucky with the time that I did launch with the Euros right afterwards was the World Cup. So there was a lot of conversation happening already, and it was just a matter of making sure that I'm putting myself in that conversation in the right way and just kind of filling a hole in the market. I think a lot of the videos that I've tried to produce on my YouTube channel, a lot of like analysis videos, which takes a lot of learning. It takes a lot of taking perspective from others. But you jump onto YouTube and you write like Manchester City, Liverpool, EPL, how did Manchester City win? You'd see like 20 videos. If you're logging onto YouTube and you're like, how did Liverpool beat Arsenal in the opening game? You're not going to see any of that. And so it was a matter of looking at what is missing in the market and what do audience want to see, and kind of trying to learn to fill that hole, because again, as a fan and audience, I want to see that and I want to learn that. So it's kind of the perspective that I was taking with a lot of the content, and it's good. It's grown because a lot of the audience also wants to see those things that I wanted to see as a fan. I was just taking perspectives and kind of like being open to learn a lot of things, and I'm still learning as I go with it. It's been remarkably fun, I have to say.
I have a question.
Yes.
Oh, did I just interrupt Rian? Sorry, Rian.
I was going to say like, there's definitely a need, but I think there's a consistency that's required. The women's fan base is mighty, and they're knowledgeable and they're invested. So that takes a lot of time investment, but also I would say that the women's game, you have to go find it. It's not readily accessible. So thank you for helping to promote it. I think just like Claire and Amy, like, this is what's exciting about the women's game is it's not going anywhere. It's only growing. And so having people on board who are willing to put out quality content and to really invest in doing their research and learning, it's been really exciting to follow that. So thank you for doing that.
Of course. And it's been fun. And this podcast, the Broadcast, is always like my go-to commute when I'm going to school. Like, before I jump into like 10 lectures, I need to get this in.
Please tell us it's not because we're considered like retro.
No, it's a lot of good jokes and a lot of good conversations about women's football. So like it hits like two birds in one stone.
But also, Claire, what's wrong with being retro?
I know, it's actually kind of cool. Yes. I guess I was born in what, 83? And like, all the 80s stuff. I mean, 90s grunge is coming back in style, right? So like, okay, fine.
Did you have a question, Claire?
Yes, I did. Miriam, I was wondering, I was about to say when you were growing up, but you're 20 and you still are. What was your experience like with soccer when you were a kid? Like, what brought you to the game and what kept you with it for this long?
It was actually funny because I was born and raised in Dubai. So I didn't actually grow up in Canada. And I had genuinely never seen a woman soccer player up until I was like maybe 12, just because that genuinely doesn't exist in that area at all. So I'd play a lot of soccer with my brother. Like, I'd see him go off to his academy and club, but I would just be like, what about me? Like, I want to go too. Like, that's not fair.
So older brother, Miriam, sorry to interrupt.
Twin brother, actually.
Twin brother. Hey, cool.
There's a lot of twin connection in here. Mm-hmm. And so it was great to have somebody my age, because we would just play constantly. Like, the weather there is not helpful anyway, but when the winter would roll around, we'd just be out playing every day. Until I remember, like, I think great five, six, I don't know what, like 11, 10 is. But I had a PE teacher who used to be a former Northern Ireland player that was our PE teacher. And she started playing soccer. And I was like, oh my God, you're so good at this. Like, how do you do that? And she was like, oh, I used to play professional football. And I was like, that's crazy. Like, you exist. I was like shocked. So she was, I think I do credit her a lot. Her name is Rachel Cromie. I don't know what she's up to now, probably teaching PE as well. But she would like show me a lot of the clips and videos, and it was just like I was thrown into a new world. So since then, it was funny because after a few years, then we moved here to Canada, and then I was like, oh, like this is a pretty big world here. I was just gravitated, was looking for how I can watch it. So I got into the game a bit later. Like I was played soccer, just didn't know women's soccer was a thing until my great PE teacher was like, no, it does actually exist and it's a pretty big world. And it was just awesome to actually connect with a former professional like herself. And yeah, I credit a lot of what I know and just my exposure to the game to her.
And when you came to Canada, how old were you?
14. Yeah, 14.
And then did you take to the sport immediately? Were you able to play in a club?
I wasn't able to play. I think there was a moment of like adjustment and just like adjusting to the culture shock. And when it was about like 15, 16, it was funny. I started like volunteering at a like Oakville soccer club where Dana Matheson used to be. And it's funny because you'd go in and like she's got all the jerseys and like they love repping her there. So
Cara Lang, I think too.
Yeah, Cara's from there too. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got like their jerseys signed in the lobby. So I wasn't able to like play anything just because I was like, I don't know what the system is here. Like, is it rep? Is it house league? Like, what are these names that are being thrown at me? So I was involved like volunteering just because I wanted to be around of like, how do they do it here? Like, who are these kids who are like 3 years old for a PA day playing soccer? Like, what does this look like? So I wasn't able to play. Like I was playing in high school, but I moved too late to actually take any professional step or like proper step, but I still play varsity at university. Like high school used to be really fun. Nothing professional, but it's fun to keep playing.
Yeah. Can I ask how you felt in the World Cup when we saw our first player come on the field wearing the Nike hijab and that moment for women's soccer? Talk about all the time, but I thought it was the coolest moment. We actually saw action steps and not talk about inclusion.
It was incredible. And to see a lot of folks actually look at her and be like, wow, like we had never thought this could happen was I honestly struggle to put into words, because as somebody who grew up not knowing there was women's soccer and then be introduced to women's soccer again, not knowing there could be somebody who looks like me also play, was like a big thing. And to see how she conducted herself in interviews and saying that she too, when she was growing up, she didn't have anybody do this at the FIFA Women's World Cup. Like that is the biggest stage to make that statement. And I think what was just the universe put it together is when they played France in the round of 16, she was playing against a country where had she been French, she couldn't be on that team. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's funny how the draw worked, but for France to be the team that knocked them out, which again, I don't think they were expecting to beat France and go past the round of 16, but to see that play out and be like, if she had just been in the opposite jersey, she wouldn't be allowed to do that was like another moment of there's still a lot of work to go. Mm-hmm. But that picture or those photos of her playing and just being on the ball goes a long way. And I've already had so many conversations with those within my community that are like, yeah, she played at the FIFA World Cup. Like it's crazy. And those pictures servicing from Morocco as well, not only just proud of the girls making it to the World Cup, but also her showing other girls in Morocco that regardless of what you look like, regardless of what your skin color is, you can make it up to the FIFA World Cup. So I think that is a moment that was just incredible to witness. And when they qualified and she was called up, like it was fantastic to see how genuinely excited everybody was to just see that play out.
In many ways, that's a microcosm of the women's game currently. Don't you think? Like that juxtaposition of that player from Morocco breaking a barrier, but then being faced against a powerhouse in a women's game where she would be barred from playing. She wouldn't be allowed to compete. And then I think it's where we find ourselves after that World Cup, where you see such a high level of competition. You see parity, bumping it up to 32 teams, fearful of these routes. But in many ways, we just see a massive growth of the game, but then still hampered by by issues that are either overt or still underlying in different cultures around the world. So where do you think, like, what are you most excited about in this coming year for women's soccer? And where do you think is where we really need to be doing the work? An easy question, Mary. Go for it.
Oh, it's not loaded at all. I think I'd be excited to see if Morocco get qualification for the Olympics, because that would also be another scene of her playing in France for the Olympics. I think, man, it's a big question. I think I'd enjoy seeing safe sports. I think it's been a bit upsetting to see the reports come out of Spain. I think that's been a hot topic now with, you know, players being mistreated and players not being heard in terms of wanting to change literally basic equipment in their gym or changing how training goes or whatever it may be, where players then are kind of bribed to, you know, stop talking and then I'll give you the minutes to play X, Y, and Z league games. And those reports out of Spain every single week are upsetting. In England, I think there's still a lot of big, I think we love to talk about the success in the WSL, but we have to recognize the huge gap, for example, between Bristol and Arsenal. Like, those gaps need to be addressed. Those players at the bottom, not all of them are professional. So I think a huge step is making sure that players are actually being taken care of in terms of safe sports, where they show up to their job knowing that they are safe, but also addressing the professionalizing problem. I don't think that's a word, but I just made it a word. But across leagues.
You know what you mean.
Yes. It's in every league, really. It's not just the WSL. Same thing with Liga F. Half of the teams at the bottom are not professionalized yet. And the from Bundesliga, the teams that are getting relegated are those that are not professional. And it's just sad to see a lot of clubs that have huge history. Like, I think Potsdam from Bundesliga had huge players that played for them. You're talking like Ada Hegerberg, you know, the big giants in Europe. And the team was not fully professionalized. It was financially struggling last season and got relegated. This is a club who won Champions League. So it's making sure that those teams who are struggling to survive are actually given that push to almost give them a bit of a chance to make themselves try to survive. And that whole professional, making them go professional, I think gives them a big boost. So those would be my two things, I think.
I think this to set the standards right across the board. And maybe Reen, you can talk about that a little bit with Project 8 coming in 2025, hoping to start a league, and obviously one of two countries at that Women's World Cup, Haiti being the other, that didn't have a domestic professional league. But now beginning, yes, it's late. We're late to the party in Canada, but immediately once this league gets going, that the standards are set high so that the players are well supported. And maybe you can talk about the importance of that.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to double back and just say, I think Miriam is reminding us the importance of representation, and we forget it because the women's game has grown to a point where we're like, this is doing so well, it's so healthy. We're still so much in the starting blocks, and some teams are further ahead, but the game itself, the women's game, is in the starting blocks, and that's what we forget. So there's an investment thing that we can't forget. So teams like Potsdam, when you try and compete with the financials of bringing Ada Hedebergs or Martas onto your team, it's really easy to overspend because these players have earned the ability to make great amounts of money. And that's what we've got to do. We've got to build. But to do that and to keep it, we have to create the environment first. And I'm a big proponent of that. And I know I'm pushing it for Project 8. I think leagues make mistakes when they try and bring in, like, pay all the money for players first, before they're bringing in the kind of coaches that will keep players here. They get their infrastructure in line, which is something in Canada we've got to be aware of, that we've got a weather problem, but we also have a facility problem. We do not have many soccer fields here that are stadiums.
And a geography problem.
And a geography problem. So I think that's something that we've got to be aware as we're building, that this is a league that we want running healthily 10, 20, 30 years down the line. What's going to bring players here? Well, it's going to be making sure that we've got great staff around them. That includes technical, but it also includes medical. It includes administration, knowing that we do have a geography problem and there's going to be a lot of movement. So how do we do that in the most professional way so that players want to stay? And just make sure that we're getting eyes on these games. So, Miriam talked about YouTube, making sure that our social media heroes here that are following the game for very little return financially are doing it because they love the game and helping us to grow it, making sure just like the PWHL, it's available on a lot of channels and people can watch it because, and I think, Miriam, how am I saying your name? I don't want to say it incorrectly. Miriam?
No, it's perfect.
Okay, thanks. Sorry. I just think that, you know, we do think the women's game is in a healthy place, and it is in a lot of ways, but we cannot rest here. This is where we've got to keep pushing and make sure people can see it. And I know soccer people know about the women's game. It's the young girls, women, maybe they're immigrants, maybe they're not, who haven't had access to the game, to make sure that they feel like they are going to have an opportunity to play professionally here in Canada and not have to go abroad because we lose players. And it's not, let's just look at Quebec. It's not, we don't have to go far to look. We don't even have to look at religion or skin color. We just have to talk about, we have a language problem here in Canada that we haven't been even servicing in terms of our documents, in terms of our pathway includes the U.S. schools at this time. So you're having French players who have to go to school in French and university. We're losing a huge part of our player population after high school. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox. What do you
think? No, but it's important though, like removing those barriers, so that we have a greater pool, a deeper pool of players to choose from. And then as those players come up through the pipeline, they have places to play. Yeah. And that's going to uphold the league.
I think part of what I find so frustrating is, and yeah, I mean, the game wasn't the same, you know, even 7-8 years ago. Certainly wasn't the same 20 years ago when we had the Under-19 tournament in Edmonton, but back it just feels like there've been back in my day. Hey, Miriam, what year were you born in?
Don't do it, Claire Rustad. Miriam, don't say it. We can all do the math. We don't need to
you
say
were,
it.
You were born in 2002, weren't you? I did the math.
She's 21.
Just showing off with your math.
Yeah. Anyway, so, but I just think of these. Yes. Just a second, buddy. Yeah, just right now, really. There were so many moments, particularly on the women's side for Canada soccer. There's so many moments over the past, say, 20 years where that I feel like we're squandered, that we're wasted. And now we're Rian, you're talking specifically, I was just thinking about the infrastructure and the facility comment. It's like, that's really expensive now. And it's like, we miss these windows where we had, where the program in particular had momentum and had a fan base.
Where legacy funding from 2015, right?
And legacy funding, like all of these moments where it's just like, why not then? And I get that it is a bit different from a professional standpoint now, but I think that I find that so frustrating. These moments that came where like the nation, they were the focus of like we were talking about during Christine's last game. We were talking about how in 2012, like that team became mainstream media. Like that became a a sports center team. Like it was talked about on those kind of like main sports shows and on the news.
It was in the zeitgeist and the culture.
It was
zeitgeist.
I love
that I use that word.
It's like now, do it now. And here we are, and it's like 11 years later. I know there's nothing I can do about it, but I find that so frustrating.
Yeah, you're going to kill yourself in that way. Like we're late.
Yes, I know. Welcome to my world.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I thank goodness we've gotten something going here and Project 8 and Diana kicking this into motion, because I agree with you. There's so many missed opportunities, but we can't die on that hill because it is now, and things are only going to get more expensive from here. So it's like, what are we waiting for? And that is I hope something that propels us forward, because being late, missing the opportunity, we've done that already. We just got to get going.
Yep.
You know? Yeah. I think financially, I don't know, how Canada soccer is doing.
Go ahead. Yes. Well, Claire, actually on that note, That's my segue. We have many things that we have to get to, and we're running out of time.
Yeah, we have 7 minutes.
Oh my God. Okay. But the first thing is, talking about Canada soccer is Bev Priestman gets extended until 2027. By the way, this is my weekly all caps announcement. There's still no host for the Women's World Cup in 2027. Okay, but I will leave that.
Salt Spring Island has a great field. So
there we go. So how are you feeling about this? My sort of knee jerk or my gut reaction was, I think it's good to reward Bev. I think it was a really tough turnaround after a poor performance at the World Cup. She navigated that really well, made brave decisions in terms of player selection, in terms of tactics. I was pleased to see it. There were some other people who were critics of it, said that she, you know, strategic and tactical failures, amongst other things. So I wanted to get you guys your quick take on the Bev Priestman extension. Mariam, why don't you start?
I don't think I was one of those critics. I think this was probably the right decision to take, that turnaround to qualify for the Olympics after what was a very, very tough World Cup. I think showed a lot of bravery, a lot of character, a lot of toughness and calling these big calls. She's also one of the few head coaches that has a contract running to 2027. So she actually has the opportunity to properly build for the World Cup. A lot of the European head coaches, all their most, at least their contracts run after the Euros in 2025. So Canada locking this down and making sure that they have a few years to properly build to that 2027 World Cup, I think is key. And Canada soccer has not had a lot of stability. This is the stability that the team has needed and wants building forward.
It's that continuity piece, right? That they're so sorely lacking.
100%.
Yeah, I honestly love what you just said. I do think there were a lot of mistakes at the World Cup, and I believe Bev would say that as well. And I loved how she reacted. I think she would have had offers from other places to go. And
I think she probably did, don't you think, Rian?
For sure. And she stuck with it. And I think not just the choices she made in team selection and team formations, but sticking with Canada soccer that is not in a great spot. It continues not to be, but it's actually better now than it was then. I thought showed, again, a lot of character and belief. She knows the landscape. There'll be players that are happy. There'll be players that won't. Welcome to teams, you know, like, but I do think it allows a really stable building platform, especially with the professional league coming. We know someone who knows the landscape, knows the players, knows the people, and has really shown a growth in her coaching. So I think she's earned this. I'm really excited for her and happy for her, and looking forward to seeing a pretty exciting team at the Olympics, because I do think Canada itself as a team, she had to contend with the retirement of the best ever player. She had to contend with the retirement of a Sophie Schmidt, of Desi Scott getting hurt. Like, I don't think we can just
rash of injuries, funding pulled. I mean,
so much yeah. She had to work with. I think that this Olympics will be a telling moment that will be challenging, but I'm looking forward to seeing her rise to it.
Yeah, I think this isn't a very fun podcast if we all agree with each other, guys. But I do think that if there's anything that the program needed right now, it's some stability, because with all of the other peripheral stuff going on, and with the number of changes, like I was in the camp that those Jamaica games after the World Cup, I mean, those were sort of her make it or break it games. Like something had to change. And we've talked about this before,
it's a drop
warning here, guys.
Just vanished below the camera there.
But it's something had to change and something did. And in a very positive way. Okay. Maybe it'll fall out. Yeah, it's going to come out, buddy. Sorry, we're losing teeth. So something changed in a very positive way.
Thank God he's talking about it too. That's all I'll say.
I know. So like the formation change, and I think even the personnel change, like bringing some new players into the fold, because for me, what the World Cup felt like was that it had really stagnated. And that was the moment she needed to change that. I agree with Rian with the assessment of the World Cup. There were some selection issues and some formation issues. There was a lot of things that went on there that I was frustrated with. But making those changes so soon after the World Cup, and now, yes, contending with a big transition for this team. And it seems silly to say that, well, just one player, but I mean, it's Christine Sinclair. It's not just one player. But it's not just one player. Sophie also leaving in. Yeah, just a second, buddy. but contending with that big of a transition, because that's not just a formation change, that's not just a personnel change, that's a mindset change for the team as well. And so I was glad. I could not imagine them going looking for a new coach right now. Oh my God, I can't deal with it. Got too much on my plate to have to deal with thinking about that. So I think it was a good move, and I think someone asked me recently kind of how I thought they were going to do with the Olympics, and it's just, I don't know. It could be a huge surprise and they could go on a run, and it could be an early exit. Like, I really just genuinely don't know, which is kind of an exciting place to be in. But I just really hope that they build on the positive changes that they've made within the way that they're playing. It's certainly more attacking, and certainly a more attacking game. And I hope that momentum continues.
Yeah, I think we're seeing also with the player selection, the players that Bev is bringing in, we're seeing different profiles of players that I think are more complementary to one another and then fit into the, you know, a tactically fluid team. You know, they're not as rigid in their approach as they used to be, but a player that is going to be built around for success for the next couple of years is Jesse Fleming. And so it's not been announced yet as this January transfer window comes to a close, tomorrow being the 31st. So hopefully there's an announcement imminent. Apparently there's been Jesse Fleming sightings in Portland. So
the cab driver is going to tell on you.
That's it. Apparently it was a cab driver. He said she was a delight, which I'm not surprised to hear. But yeah, apparently Jesse Fleming's there. So hopefully an announcement is coming soon. But Miriam, I wanted to get your take because you do know the WSL very, very well. What you think of Jesse moving away from Chelsea, and then maybe just touch a little bit on Emma Hayes and how her departure to the U.S. women's national team at the end of this WSL season might, I don't think it'll spark an exodus of players, but do you think that might be a factor in maybe some players leaving?
100%. I think for Jesse, this was definitely the right move to do it now. I think it was a question of, is she going to leave in the January window or is she going to leave in the summer window? I think we had known that she was going to leave regardless. But I think the fact that Chelsea had a lot of injuries in the likes of Sam Kerr that was already dealing with a calf injury. Gurwrighton was out. They had a few missed players in the midfield. Aaron Cuthbert missed a few games. You had all these injuries happening, and Jesse was still not getting starts in the WSL. She'd gone a few minutes of the cup games and the Champions League, but still was not being chosen to start or just play minutes really in the league. And I think it looked like for her, every game was just a backstep almost. Every game she was still sitting on the bench. And so for Jesse, she needs to get those playing minutes and she deserves to get those minutes. I think it was very similar to like Beth England last season, who also left in the January window, who is a player who could start in any other squad, is starting in Spurs. She's captaining the team. Like, she's taking on that role, and it's the same situation with Jesse, that she could be starting in any other squad. I think Emma Hayes had spoken about Jesse being, or her biggest qualities in the squad was her counter-pressing abilities, but she still wasn't in favor for Emma Hayes. So I think Chelsea get a good chunk of money here. Jesse gets playing time, which I think is great for Canada as well. Like, she's gonna picked up for Canada regardless, but it'd be better that she's match fit and she's getting all those minutes for Canada, and Portland get a fantastic player like her. For Emma Hayes leaving, I think this was definitely the conversation, because I think if she's not getting those minutes under Emma Hayes, it's going to be a much harder task to prove to the new head coach that, hey, I need to be starting. If you're not doing this with Hayes, it's just become that much of a tougher task with the new head coach. And as for Chelsea, she's most definitely very involved in the contract extensions. Like, they just extended Sam Kerr. Frank Kirby is in negotiations, apparently. Aki Beaver-Jones, one of their youngsters, also getting a contract extension. So it looks like Emma Hayes,
one of the best names in women's soccer or sport, I have
absolutely
to say.
100%. So it looks like she's involved in these negotiations of the players that they want to keep, they want to build around, and those who are maybe they're unsure about are trying to get good fees for them, just like Jesse Fleming. So I think Emma is very, very involved in the turnaround, and I think you wouldn't expect her to do anything else. Like, she's involved in the contract extensions, like always, and the player being brought in, and whoever the new head coach is coming afterwards. She's weighing in her decision, which I think is great. This is what Chelsea deserves. And this is, I think, what she owes them in terms of, okay, I spent almost a decade here. I'm leaving, but I'm going to make sure that there's a good turnaround. Whoever comes in next is able to take over.
Mm-hmm. Rian, what's your take? I mean, you know the Thorns very, very well. Jesse moves over. She'll get a chance to play with Sink in Sink's last year. You have Janine Becky coming back from the ACL injury, who is part, we should say, of Bev's provisional roster for the Women's Gold Cup upcoming on starting on February 20th. So how do you think she slots in there, and how do you think the players who are already there will sort of help her, and how will they complement one another?
Yeah, I have a lot to say on this, but I know Claire has to go, so I didn't know if you wanted Claire to...
Yeah, Claire, did you want to weigh in?
I'm okay for a few more minutes. Milo's being surprisingly independent right now, so we're good.
I think it's a knee-jerk reaction from Jesse to go, because I think she would play under a new coach. But when you've been at a club for as long as Jesse's been at Chelsea, and you're not getting, it's almost like she's got such a great attitude. She's always there, shows up. It's really hard to change a coach's mindset. So I'm really glad. I think she should have gone before now. But I'm glad that she's gotten frustrated enough that she's making a decision. The move to Portland, like Jesse, I have a lot of time for Jesse, but I think her game needs sharpness. Like Jesse loves the beautiful game. She loves to build. She loves... And the reality is Jesse's playing, I would say, at a 6 on 10. Mm. And I say the same thing about Kadisha, and I'd say the same thing about Ashley. And love these women, my teammates, and I'm going to critique them.
I love how you've got your jaunty manager's cap on now.
It drives me wild. They must get sharper. And I think the NWSL, you can critique it all you want. It's moved away from pure transition. There are coaches that are coming in that are really playing. There's a surface problem that's being addressed in Portland, and that it's artificial. And I think, you know, players are worried about their legs and longevity on that, but that's being changed at Portland. I think it's a really strong move. I think that she will be forced to play in a way that will only help Canada, which is she's going to have immediate pressure. She'll be playing with good players that aren't, that there's a space for her on the field. She has to play, but it's the opposition that I'm most excited about. They will be in her face immediately, where the WSL can be a lot calmer in different games. Miriam brought up that there's totally different types of games in England that you play. You could be playing Arsenal one week, you'd be playing a Birmingham the next, where you're having, and I know that's disrespectful to Birmingham, it's just different money that's being invested into those teams. So you've got a really big jump in skills, in talents. That is super disrespectful, but it is what it is.
Just before Claire jumps in, do you think her ideal position would be as a number eight, like a box-to-box midfielder, or more advanced even in a 10, like an attacking midfielder?
I think she wants to be a 10, but she plays like an eight. She just runs. She runs and runs and runs. And you know, part of that is stopping her running that much. And I mean that, you know, I think we had this idea that, oh, look how much this player has run. How much of that is effective running? And that's the same for Jessie. Like she puts in a huge workload every game. How much is effective? I want her in better areas. So hopefully Mike Norris and having a team that's built around, she can play a 10. I want her a 10. I want her scoring goals. I think it'll help Canada. I think it's a part of her game she needs to work on, but I think she'll end up being an eight because she can't stop. Just can't stop.
Claire's sorry. Gesturing madly.
No, I just, I'm being pestered badly. I think pace is the thing that she needs, right? So I think that I agree. There's this kind of, this a bit of a disconnect between how she's playing, how she can play. And I think that there's something that you can't replace about match fitness. And it certainly comes down to kind of the pace of the play. And you can't replace that just with training. And so I think, yeah, when I heard about her move, I only had kind of positive thoughts about that, with the caveat that I hope she plays because it doesn't seem like a smart move if she goes and doesn't play any more than she did at Chelsea.
A lot of money and not play someone. She'll be
right. Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, that makes sense.
It's rumored to be a record £250,000 transfer fee, or 428,000 Canadian dollars.
Yeah. So
not playing. That's a huge move. Chelsea's like, okay.
Yeah. No. I think that I would hope that the plan is like immediately featuring. And are you putting tape on my neck?
As one does.
But I think the plan would be to immediately feature, and that I think that's a really good sign. And yeah, honey, I'm busy, sweetheart. Can you give me 5 more minutes? Thank you. And I think anyway, pace. I don't know. I'm sorry. We're fading here and I got to get into school. And
okay.
I have no more coherent thoughts. I'm just glad that she's in a position where she's probably going to be playing more.
Yep. That's great. If you have to bounce, Claire, we get it. Thank you.
Yes, I'm going.
Up.
Thank you, okay. Miriam. That was fun. I'm going to see you guys later.
Okay. Bye, Claire.
Okay. Bye.
Rian, before you said, just before we'll wrap up, because we'll keep this tight, I said it was going to be 45 and now we're at 52, but you said she wants to be a 10, but she's more of an 8. And I feel like that's me in my daily life. Like I want to be like a 10, but I'm realistically probably a 6 on 10, but I live my life trying to be a 10 on 10.
I'll leave that alone and you and your therapist. I think, It's not a, I don't mean that an 8 is the hardest. It's such
oh my gosh. So much thankless work.
Thankless work. And she does that naturally. And she's so good at it. I think a 10, it's a feeling that you get, it's a rare player that can really, really nail a 10 because it's a timing piece. Like when you're playing the ball, when you're breaking the line.
Doesn't everyone want to nail a 10, Rian?
Oh boy. that's on me. I'll left that for
yep.
you. But I think she will get time at the 10. I do. I think I think Portland's a great shout for her. She's someone who likes to be comfortable. And she's very good friends with Jesse Fleming. Obviously Christine's there, but also Mike Norris is the coach, and that's someone she's worked with a lot with the national team. I know she really gets on with him, trusts him, and will buy into what he's doing there. So she'll be playing. I think she'll have an instant impact. I think you'll see her very quickly settle in to that team. I think it's actually a great shout with the players they have. And that they've traded. I mean, they lost a great player in Rocky Rodriguez.
Yes, who moves to Angel City, right?
Maybe a good move for her. And I say that, think she's wonderful. But I hope she gets the minutes that she deserves. And it opens up, for Jesse Fleming, like really clear 90-minute players now on both those teams.
Great. Well, I think we'll end it there, guys. We're out of time. But Miriam, thank you so much for coming on. And for anybody who does not follow you, where can they find you?
She Scores Bangers on YouTube, Twitter, all streaming platforms. Yeah, kept it nice and simple. Everything the same.
Yeah. Honestly, you're badass. So, like, if you're not following Miriam, you need to be following Miriam. And like and subscribe to Footy Prime, the podcast, and to Broadcast. So keep broadening your horizons. And thanks for listening, everybody. And hopefully we'll have another one of these episodes in the coming weeks. But we're shooting for once a month and maybe a little bit more frequently if there's events like the Women's Gold Cup coming up and She Believes and all the stuff that in the lead up to Paris this summer. So thank you so much for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Footy Prime has been brought to you by Fubo TV and by Tony Bett. Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeIG.
Bye. Thanks again, Miriam. You've been great. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you so much for inviting me on. This was like I mentioned, as an avid listener on my commute. Like this was such a pleasure to join you and Rian and Claire. Like it's my honestly honored.
Well, it's our honor. Thank you for giving your time and thanks for coming on.
Of course, thank you.
I need to figure out how to stop record here.
Sure.
Aha.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.